Welcome back to the House of Cards. Today we're talking Season 2, Episode 6, or Chapter 19, if you're following along in Netflix. In this episode, we've got a heat wave, brownouts, more stabbing people in the back and manipulating each other.
Are you telling me we're just having more and more House of Cards?
We're having more House of Cards.
All I'm hearing out of you is Roberto, we are just talking House of Cards, and we're just having more House of Cards shoved in with our House of Cards
along with
our House of Cards.
I think it's because we had such a long break over the holidays, and the holidays are so happy and joyous, and now we're back to... backstabbing.
All right. Really quick side question to both you and Charlotte. What would a Christmas episode of House of Cards look like?
If
for some reason they had to have like a holiday special. I want the holiday special of House of Cards. I want Kevin Spacey singing Silent Night. That's all I want now.
No, it's Kevin Spacey carving someone like a turkey.
Oh my God, yes. Can we have that now? Can we have that yesterday?
Oh, no. Actually, him taking the turkey, you know, because, that's Thanksgiving, that they have the presidential pardon of the turkey. And
yes.
For Frank Underwood, he would not pardon the turkey, and he would kill it with his bare hands.
Someone's got to do it.
Yeah. What were your thoughts on this episode? Anybody?
Let's start with Charlotte.
Yeah, I think it's getting a bit too involved with the bits, when we get into the bits around China and the diplomacy of that and the energy crisis. But I think it's quite clever how we see the portrayal of these two men, Tusk and... I've said before, I don't like the Tusk and Frank ongoing storyline. I think it's just quite boring.
Mm-hmm.
Quite willy waving, but I think it's very clever how they do it here, with the way we see, you know, the energy spikes and the battles going on there, and how it actually plays out in terms of public policy. It's quite well done, but I think all the stuff as it moves off into China is getting a bit involved. Although it's probably more realistic that it's not so self-contained.
Yeah, one thing that I did like about this is that now we're seeing Frank in the last several episodes, he really had to make Tusk think that he was going to work with him somehow. And you know, he made it very clear from the beginning, I will not be your puppet, but if the stars align, then we'll work together. And he kind of did a few times, but now it's, you know, as Tusk points out, well, you know what, you've got an office right down the hall from the Oval Office, so you've got a huge advantage over me. And as we listen to Frank and the president talk, the president is listening to Frank and what he says about Tusk, and that Tusk has, and I'm wondering... Because, you know, when it comes down to, basically there's this mineral that they want to buy, stockpile, so that to kind of kick China in the knee there. But this mineral is something that Tusk's companies control. So it's really like punching Tusk and China at the same time. And my question to you is, what does Frank really care about? I mean, is it that he's just... Is he trying to hurt the president, or is he trying to hurt Tusk? What's his motive?
It's a civil war. I mean, he said it last episode or whatever. It was like, it's time to go to war. It's time for civil war. And when that kind of mentality, it is a him versus Tusk. You know, it's either him or me, so to speak, in that kind of vernacular. Because it's obvious that Frank is really trying to hurt Tusk, but he's kind of clouding it in this global kind of political thing. Like, I think that might be the bad thing. It's just that's the arena he has to now play in. And so he's really pushing the president to, you know, stand your ground. Don't give in. Don't do this. Like, I think at one point in the early episode, he's like, you know what, I'm going to give Tusk a call. We're going to have kind of a one-on-one meeting. And Frank was like, I highly don't suggest doing that. And part of me goes, well, he's right, you know, in a way. You don't want to have the president controlled by a private citizen in any way, shape, or form. But it's very obvious that Frank's not doing this for the betterment of the American people.
Right. No, you're spot on to point out the Civil War element of this, because he even says to Stamper about Tusk, well, we're going to choose the battlefield. And he's using all of this war analogy, and I think that we see a lot more of it in this season. So he's definitely at war. And I think it's funny to compare him with Claire, but we could talk about Claire later, I suppose, however you guys want to do it. But Claire, she has this issue now of rape in the military. And I'm starting to wonder if she really gives a damn about it, or is she just trying to stab at the military to get them on their side? Because one thing that we know as Americans is that in order for a president to win and become president, he has to have the military supporting him in his campaign in some aspect.
Maybe, possibly. Ultimately, I think it's just her next kind of thing that she keeps up with, her next sort of cause. I mean, she's the kind of person that tends to like to do stuff. And when she left the whole water initiative, as you know, as like, well, that's what I did when I was the wife of a congressperson. Now that I'm the wife of the vice president, I should do something a bit more meaty, for lack of better words. But maybe, I mean, it's not a bad interpretation to think that either.
I think Claire does care about the issue, and I think she's quite happy to use the platform provided to her by Frank to raise it. I think it's quite a personal thing for her that she hates the person that raped her.
Yeah.
She has a very understandable personal vendetta against him, and is, because of the nature of her, is going to win that battle with him. So, and I do think that, and I think what's interesting, and it becomes more and more apparent as season two goes on, is how much she sees herself as an extension of Frank. In the way the Bill Clinton used to joke, you get two for the price of one if you vote for me, because you used to get Hillary, you get Hillary as well. Claire is positioning herself like that as well. They speak a lot about what we're working for, what we're doing. She's not just there to hold. She's quite different to, say, the first lady who we see her interact with a lot. She's much more independent and politically minded than Trish, who's the first lady. And I think she probably does quite like getting stuck into issues and winning battles and, you know, playing out her personal opinion. So, yeah, I think she does care. I'm not, you know, her motivations might not be entirely pure because, you know, they're obviously from a very personal place. But I think she does care quite passionately about getting stuff done.
I'm interested in seeing how far Claire takes this this issue as the story progresses and things change.
Who's going to try and stop her, and is she prepared to fight them?
Yeah, right. Well, you know, one thing that I didn't notice my first or second viewing, the second viewing I did with a family member just to, you know, get ready to record this series, but the first time I watched, you know, when I binged watched, but this time, while taking notes, I can't believe I didn't notice this, but there's this scene with Claire and Trisha Walker, and they're preparing for this speech or this event where she's going to introduce the president's going to introduce the first lady, and the first lady says, Trisha Walker, she says, well, we can't, if the president is there, we can't push the military. We've got to make this a general issue. We can't really focus it on being the military. And she says, okay, I completely understand. And then at that moment, Christina walks in the door. And, you know, there's a bit of an exchange, and she leaves. And then, you know, Trisha says, what's wrong? And she said, oh, well, you know, it's nothing but, you know, it's probably none of my business, but I don't really like that girl, or I don't like her.
It's Claire that says that.
Yeah, well, right. I'm sorry. Claire. I didn't know that. That's
where my brain kicks in the doubt-o-meter a bit. Specifically that scene. I'm not saying she's not passionate and serious about the whole...
I know. Why does she not like Christina?
She's the powerful, young, attractive woman who has influence over their husband.
You know, but she liked her perfectly fine. She was concerned about her well-being after Peter Russo's death.
Really?
There was a scene.
Yeah, but then she started working for the president. It became an obstacle.
That's a good point. That's a damn good point.
Okay, so
Jackie, you and I have both met women who like this, who are perfectly fine for a little bit, but as soon as you start being pulled up, They don't want.
Oh boy, yes.
Other women, we could probably both recount stories of this, and I think there's a little element of that. And also, I think it's in a way, Christina's collateral damage to just trying to unsettle Trisha.
I absolutely agree. I think that this is more about plotting against Trisha, because what I didn't notice, what I was going to say, is when Christina left the room, she told her that story that I don't really trust her. Well, you know, she did sleep with her boss, and I don't really like women who do that. And then she was putting some sort of cloud in Trisha's mind about, you know, oh, is there something wrong with my marriage? You know, because we know that there's a little bit of a marriage issue with the president. And so she's really playing on her insecurities. And then she immediately says, well, okay, on the bright side, if the president doesn't show up, we can attack the military. You know, and then they cut the scene. And it's like, well, she got what she wanted by manipulating Trisha, distracting her with this, oh my God, is my marriage falling apart?
You know? I mean, the thing is that I almost feel like what I think happened was essentially, honestly, out of all the scenes, I did like this scene really highly out of this episode, because it was such a subtle, sowing a seed of doubt, such a subtle drop of I don't really like her. She tends to sleep with her bosses, not implying anything about I think they're sleeping together. I think that, not even remotely doing that. Just saying, you know, as a matter of fact, as a poof, here it is. And because of what she knows exactly what she's doing, because this is Claire Underwood, and that's how Claire Underwood is. I love that, because oh man, I was just like, this could go somewhere. This is going to be the interesting plot right here.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's because you're a man. I think girls pick up, get female viewers would get that it's not subtle at all to a woman. You know exactly what game Claire's playing.
Well, I say subtle because of she didn't outright state, I think your husband is sleeping with his secretary.
Yeah,
you know, didn't come up in any way, shape, or form.
You're right, Trisha. Trisha, you're right, Charlotte. Trisha would, if she were a stronger woman and less insecure about her relationship with her husband, she probably would have said, look, I don't need to take, you know, advice from you. My marriage is perfectly fine, thank you. Yes, and you should, because Claire backpedals and says, oh, I'm sorry, I should probably just keep it to myself. I shouldn't have said anything. Then that would be Trisha's opportunity to say, yeah, you probably should. Everything's fine, you know. But she didn't, and you could kind of see, oh, what's going on? I've lost control of my husband. Is no longer my husband. He's the president of the United States.
Well, yeah, because this is I hope they don't do anything like that, because that would be a little cliche at this point.
Yeah.
But it is a thing that happens. It's happened various times in various years, so it's not out of the realm of impossibility.
President Walker saying, I did not have sexual relations. Yeah.
All right, well, before we go into our next section of the thing, we got to actually thank some people. We got to thank a couple sponsors, specifically one, the awesome people that are at uk2.net. They cover all the costs of bandwidth and hosting for all shows here on the British Tech Network. They can help with web addresses, help you build websites, and give you all the tools you need to manage your website, handle traffic, and downloads. Our own Charlotte Henry here uses them and sings their praises every week without fail.
Yeah, they're amazing, and they hooked me up this week as well. I tried to log into the back end of my website on a Sunday evening, and for some reason it was redirecting and not working. I woke up on Monday morning and they'd fixed it.
Oh, wow, that's good to hear.
I spoke to a human being, an actual human being, on Sunday evening. By Monday morning, it was fixed.
So there you go. They'll even talk to you on weekends. But that's also very impressive. And it's rare you get a support on weekends, let alone that. Of course, you can head on over to britishtechnetwork.com/sponsors for a list of codes and offers available there. And we'd like to thank UK2.net for all the support they give us here at the British Tech Network.
Great. The other story that I really like in this is the Lucas Janine Hammersmith, well, now Hammersmith, who, if you don't recall, he was the former editor of the Washington Herald. Is that the name of the paper that they're using?
Yeah.
And they're trying to be the Washington Post in a way, you know, kind of a spoof of that. But, and Lucas is in prison. and he is trying to reach out to Hammersmith to write a story and get it published about what happened to Zoe and Peter Russo. And he's hoping that he can use that to play with the government, because the government is really pushing a plea deal. They are ready to give him 10 years in prison for two counts, but served together. And with 7 years with parole possible, and so he could be out in 7 years or even less with good behavior.
Exactly.
Otherwise, he'll be in there for at least a minimum of 35 years if he doesn't work with a plea deal, because they don't want him talking. And that's very clear. So, and he says that, so he tries to get Hammersmith to write a story, but Janie also gets a visit from the FBI, and they tell her, basically, well, you know, we can arrest you for conspiracy, and who's going to take care of your mother while you're in prison for 3 years until you get a trial or whatever the case may be? So there's a lot of pressure on them, on all of them. And it sounds like Hammersmith, I forgot his first name, Tom. I think his name is Tom. He seems like he's really on board to help Lucas at first. And he starts really investigating, looking into all of the stories and the references that Lucas gave him. But at some point, he kind of negates Lucas's story. Or this is obviously a question for Charlotte as a political journalist. What do you think of, just go.
Yeah, it was quite sad watching their relationship had kind of disintegrated in a way, because Tom is still obviously furious at Lucas over all the stuff with Zoe, but you can see the sort of journalistic instinct kind of pull at him, and you know, he can't resist going through the documents and looking at the story, and I suspect we'll see more of that. And is Tom going to be the one that saves Lucas? And of course, what happens to the hacker?
Right.
Because if Lucas doesn't go down, presumably the hacker does.
Do you think that Hammersmith came, because the story he wrote basically said, you know, is that Lucas is claiming this, however, the police say it was suicide with Russo and accidental with Zoe, and because I kind of looked at the document that he put up on the prison glass as he was showing him, and showing him, look, this is what I'm going to write. Do you think that it was a journalistic ethics and integrity that he really didn't have the evidence to prove it, and that's why he wrote that story? Or do you think it had something to do with the meeting he had with Frank in the Oval Office, or in the White House, where Frank just completely dismissed it? He kind of could tell that there was really no way he's going to get Frank.
I mean, it's clearly a bit of both. You can't, it's quite a big deal to say the Vice President of the United States is a murderer. I mean, you've got to have some serious firepower behind you if you're going to run that. It's pretty bold that he even did the hinting at story, if you want to say that in his favor.
But again, that's true.
But again, it's all part of the disintegration between their relationship, because Lucas is obviously furious about the second, you know, the story.
Right.
Well, because like that, you know, Charlotte, you're right. Like that, you better have the right aim when you take that kind of shot. I think with Hammersmith, it's sort of like wrestling with that idea of, is this true, or am I listening to the ramblings of a man who was madly in love with a girl that killed herself? You know, and that's where every one of these, the only one that's really not is Janie, just because she knows exactly what went down, but she's kind of in a very personal position. But I'm curious. I'm really curious how to see how this all develops, because I really want to, I mean, I always felt like Lucas was a little too much in his head, and I wish, you know, over his head, and I wish he'd kind of given it up. But at the same time now, I'm like, I don't want to see the guy go to that hardcore prison and just get completely and utterly obliterated. He won't survive a day.
I agree with you. What bothered me about Lucas is his decision to go through with going to the AT&T servers and plugging in that device to, you know, try to get the phone records. When he's a journalist of a very important Washington newspaper, and he risks everything by breaking the law. Like, I just don't see many journalists going that route. You know, they'll talk to someone who did it, but they're not going to go do that themselves. So I, you know.
No, but that's kind of the point, that Lucas is so consumed by this thing that he's doing – exactly what you said. What you're saying is completely right, because he's behaving in a totally irrational way. And I think we're meant to that's meant to show something to us about Lucas's psyche, because what you're saying is completely right, that he is totally behaving irrationally. And if he really wanted to stand up, you know, a murder story, he could do it. He knows in other cases he would step back and do it logically and differently. But I guess he feels curtailed a bit by his superiors, and then... But I think you're right. But I think he's meant to, you know, we're meant to see his, you know, how that he really did love Zoe, that he's completely thrown by not having her around anymore. I mean, he's losing his whole career. He's lost everything.
So there's another story, which is the whole Stamper and Rachel story.
That's the one that I've kind of also excited to see develop more.
Okay.
Only because
finally!
Well, you know, I was wondering when that was going to happen. I was really wondering when Stamper was going to come, you know, kind of start laying the kibosh down on that. And I feel for Rachel, because I know she needs to have some type of, you know, outside contact with the outside world and socialize and all that fun stuff. At the same time, I get where Stamper's coming from. You know, I love that meeting in the car. Just like, what if you bumped into somebody that recognized you? What if this happened? What if all these things happened? And Stamper's got to think, not just simply for Rachel's sake and having her go through the ringer, but just for everything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Charlotte?
Well, we kind of don't really know everything about Rachel yet. We're two series in, and she's always just been under the surface. And that, I find that quite interesting, because we don't really know how she came into contact with Frank and Stamper. We don't know why they're so worried about her. Okay, it's sort of to do with Peter Russo, and she's probably worked out who was behind his death, but we don't really know the full story around Rachel, and I think that's quite interesting.
Yeah, I mean, because you're absolutely right. We don't really know too much. You know, I think about, we don't know that much about her. I still feel for her. Like, I still understand that need of, like, human interaction and, like, doing stuff. Because it's cool when we open the scene with her, you know, going to the AC, doing stuff. But then we see her going to the church, you know, the whole church group, and talking to the kids and reading stories and being this very loving person.
Yeah, I agree. There's obviously been some bad stuff that's led her to her situation that we don't know yet. Like I said, we don't know her backstory that much. But it's quite interesting to see how she's a very sympathetic character. She's she's obviously very bright, quite, you know, practical, quite spunky, quite, you know, she's got quite a lot about her. She's got quite a lot going for her, but has sort of is never quite gone her way. And I think she's quite an interesting character. In a way, we could see her develop into the role Zoe had. Because, you know, she's this sort of younger, quite determined, quite bright, younger female character. And I think she can get into Frank and Stamper, and I think that's quite interesting.
Absolutely. She just had a hard life. I mean, she, you know, and so the scene with her playing with the kids and doing the little bumblebee bzzz thing, and, you know, she's really finally kind of really enjoying her life. And it's a very simple sort of life, but, you know, it's something. It's something better than what she was stuck with in D.C. as a prostitute and, you know, and everything that Stamper has dragged her into. You know, certainly being a waitress wasn't the best for her. But she started to like that because it was her own, and he pulled her away from that. So, I think you're right.
I have to say, I'm meeting, you know, a lot of websites do recaps and reviews of all the episodes. And whenever we're playing for the show, I read a couple of them to see what other people have made of it. And there's a lot of complaints about the rather technical storyline about the energy price and the Sumerian subsidies and I agree, actually, that they got that wrong with this episode. I think when House of Cards is at its best, it's about, yes, it's about politics, but it's about the people.
Mm.
And it's about the interactions between the characters and their lives and the storylines around them. And actually, I think this got far, far, far too bogged down.
Well, because I think this episode... in general, had to do a lot more world building, for lack of better words. I know we're in politics and I realize it's actually real, but we still have to, you know, present the world and the backdrop that exists with it. I think it did get bogged down for sure. I will not disagree that this is just basically, here's real politics 101. Like, here's actually policy making 101. But at the same time, I know that they needed to do this to get to certain things, especially near the end of the episode. And sort of like, here is sort of, because there's a moment in, I think, before all the pitch throwing and just to kind of that he goes to Freddy's barbecue, and Freddy's like talking about how it's so hot and all these things, and people are just having sex in their apartments because it's so freaking steamy. That to get to there, we almost need this backdrop of all this political crap. I think it could have been cut down very, very shortly, but it still needed to happen. We still needed that, like, here's the base we're building upon.
I think that's right. It's absolutely fine to have some kind of policy scrap that's going on between Frank and Tusk. And I think that's, you know, they've obviously decided we're going to see this battle between these two big guys play out, and that's absolutely fine. But I think when you get into the technicalities of energy subsidies and who owns energy plants and stuff like that, actually you're losing some of what makes House of Cards great.
We got to thank one more sponsor, Jackie, and that being, of course, the Network Union. They're an authorized BT business partner licensed to sell their global and UK services. Their experience has been earned from working with the large global and UK enterprise, but now they're also working with SMEs. They handle sort of the bigger pipeline connections, things like MPLS, VPLS, Ethernet, Internet lease lines, wide area network connectivity, all that crazy stuff. So if you're kind of in the IT, especially in the UK, and you're looking for someone to give you a way beefier connection, maybe you need to power a server farm, maybe you just need to have a bigger pipe, maybe you're uploading a ton of video or doing something crazy with the internet that you just need that hunk in line to do so, head on over to networkunion.co/British Tech for more info and to show your appreciation for their support of the British Tech Network.
Great, thank you. Well, so talking about the energy brownout issues, I think that it seemed very unrealistic in many ways that Tusk was sort of bullying Frank around and threatening that he could possibly there could be brownouts, and you can't do this, you can't push us. And then as Frank is preparing to throw a baseball out at, and is it the Orioles? I don't know.
Yeah, it's the Baltimore Orioles at Camden Yards.
Oh, okay. All right.
Great. The person across the pond knows more about baseball than us.
Exactly. I don't know. I mean, that could have been American football for all I know. I don't know.
Even better.
Digging
the hole deeper.
Well, see, it kind of made sense to me because I saw some female singing the American anthem, and I was like, oh, okay, so they do that at those things, right? Like, I don't know if they do them in all games.
Just go.
So anyways, I'm sorry, everyone. So Frank is going to throw this. So this is one of the comedy relief ends of this show, is Frank apparently threw out a ball at a game in his state when he was state senator or something, and Claire completely teased him that he didn't get it, and he's out and back practicing and
love that scene. I love the Meacham and Frank just literally like throwing a pitch, throwing the ball around and just like, what's your you're gonna cross the line and whatnot, because he's not gonna make it.
Again, this is not very original.
Nah.
This exact sequence happened in The West Wing.
Oh yeah, this is a common thing. This is such a trope that I'm not. I still love it. I always love those. Like, there's certain tropes I enjoy about when you have people in office, and I always love the throwing the first baseball of something thing, because that leads to a really funny moment.
Yeah,
almost the exact same sequence happened in The West Wing with Martin Sheen, President Bartlett throwing it with Charlie, and they smash that, they throw the ball and Charlie's laughing at him, and he gets to the ground and they give him a Kevlar vest and he realizes he can't throw. You can't actually throw in body armor.
No.
And they do the same sequence here. Maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's just a TV trope. Maybe it's a little nudge towards the West Wing. But,
okay.
So I did think it was very original, but it's quite cute nonetheless. And I like the growing dynamic between Meacham and Frank, although it makes me worry for Meacham.
Yeah, because Meacham is allowed to know all of Frank's insecurities now. You know, he's not embarrassed to throw the ball with Meacham, but and he's the only one. Like, he couldn't get somebody else. He could have asked someone from the Red Sox. Orioles?
Nah, man. Look, if you're gonna have someone protect your life, you're gonna have to trust them with a lot of things. You know, if this guy's gonna be the person that could potentially take a bullet for you, you gotta trust him with a lot more than just, you know, whatever. That makes sense. You know, that makes sense in my head of like, yeah, if this guy was gonna take a bullet for me, he better know the whole story as much as I'm willing to tell. But he better understand who the hell I am and that kind of thing. Because I gotta make sure he's gonna take a bullet for the vice president here. Let's at least give him that respect.
So, but basically what happens is, you know, he has a conversation with Tusk, and they kind of bicker back and forth about what's going to happen. And that's when Tusk threatens that there might be a brownout. Then he leaves the conversation because he runs into Claire and inside of Frank's house. And it's the first time meeting Claire. So he has to be all, you know, charismatic and, oh, how are you doing? And, you know, and you could see the look on Frank's face, like, you know, just, you know, because they just, like, were, like, going head-to-head in the other room, but he had to be pleasant because Claire was in the room. And so he leaves, and he says, good luck tomorrow with that game. And then the next thing is we see Frank at the game. He's got, you know, a bulletproof vest on. He's getting ready. He goes out to throw the ball, and then the power goes out. And they do a whole, you know, Homeland Security type a tactic of grabbing him and running out with him to get him away. So he doesn't have to throw the ball. Now, the thing about the brownout is this has happened in American history. There have been fake brownouts that have affected people and the way they vote, the way they view energy. This has been proven in many circles. But, you know, without going into a lot of that, you know, I think that that's why they plugged this in the show, because they're looking for those kinds of issues that people can, I don't know, relate to.
Even then.
Conspiracy in government.
Well, no, even then, the brownout happening right then and there at a nationally televised, mind you, baseball game with the vice president throwing the opening pitch, like that's, if there's any place to make the stand of the energy crisis is real in the American public's eye, that's the place to go, because that becomes the news cycle. That becomes that. It's much like when Claire dropped the whole military rape thing on the air, that this is that exact equivalent, because it's not so much even Tusk having to do anything, because Tusk had threatened it. Whatever, who cares? Oh, there'll be brownouts because that's what happens when we don't do it. But now you've given fuel to people talking about it and saying, well, what is our real policy on the energy crisis? What is this, that? And people, you'll have all pundits around all the heads, everyone calling the president, and then we get back into this battleground and showing kind of, also it shows Tusk, you know, it shows Frank Tusk sort of power. And what, if Frank is in the Oval Office able to do this, you know, Tusk is like, okay, poof, off, you know.
Just one last thing on the dynamic between Frank and Tusk. Jackie's commented on this lots of times, and I completely agree with her, that Frank doesn't care about money, he cares about power. That's his equivalent. The bank account doesn't matter to him so long as he's in power. And I think there's an interaction between them that sums this up perfectly. In that head-to-head Jackie was describing, Frank says to Tusk, you may have all the money, Raymond, I have all the men with guns. And I think that just about sums Frank's worldview up perfectly. You can throw your money around, but eventually I've got the people that can kill you.
That's a good point.
Yeah, it's energy fighting the guns.
The power versus power.
Right.
We should probably end with this last point, that being the whole Jackie Remy thing.
Jackie?
Not Jackie. You put Jackie there. Isn't that what her...
No, it is. I'm kidding. It is.
Okay, let's say, is that her name?
She's the new House Majority Whip that replaces Frank. Yes, I was just making a joke.
I know. what do you two think? I'm curious what you two think of it, especially. I'll start with you, Charlotte.
I think Jackie's a bit of a badass, actually. I quite like her. I've got a bit of a crush on Jackie, I have to be honest. I think she's pretty awesome.
I did too. I like Jackie. I especially like just after the whole like going into it, getting out of the whole sleeping situation, and just how nonchalant it mattered to her, because like it was so apparent that Remy was like trying to pull the whole like, well, we slept together, I'll do the whole like I love you, baby, that kind of thing, and Jackie's like, nope, I'm not falling for this, and it's almost like, you know, you see what Frank saw in her. In terms of like that edge that Frank had saw, like in other words, I'm not saying she's pure Frank, she's not, but seeing this scene, I could see a little bit of how, what Frank saw and why he wanted her versus anybody else.
Did she sleep with him because she was trying to make sure, you know, the proper message got to Tusk, or did she not care, or was this a personal choice? After several rounds of drinks, because I do buy the whole extra drinks, because she really should not have accepted a single gift from a lobbyist, and him buying the drinks was total like completely unethical. Although it happens every day, and it's probably happening right now in every state in the U.S., but they're not supposed to do that. And so, you know, she says, well, I'll buy the next round. So, I mean, I don't know. I think that there is something there. Or maybe she's looking at Remy as somebody who is a lobbyist for one of the most powerful firms in the country. And, you know, he could be somebody who can help her down the line.
Yeah, I think she does like to have a hold on him. He's a very good-looking guy. Why would you not be attracted to it? I mean, I could see how they're kind of quite similar, and they understand each other, the world each other operate in. So I think there probably is an attraction there. And also, I think, like Roberta's saying, she's got that kind of Frank edge, and it's something she can have a hold, someone she can have a hold on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's very true, because that's what Frank does, is grab people that he can have a hold of, and then when he's done with them, they're gone.
Yeah. But she makes it very, very apparent, especially when it comes to the whole, just that, like, you haven't left yet, like, watch me, and then just, like, as she just walks out, like, you know, like, nothing had happened, because after that, just back to business, for lack of better words.
Yep.
And I also agree, I like Jackie in this show, too. I think she's already an interesting character, and she was interesting at first, she's more interesting now, and I can't wait to see where she goes and how she develops, too.
I'm going to cut out what you just said there. I like Jackie in this show, she's great, I like to see where she's going to
it's interesting that they've obviously now got Jackie's romantic life brought in there, but I don't. Frank's not cheating on Claire at all, unless I've missed something and he's madly in love with Freddie. I haven't seen him being. You know, I haven't. He's not cheating on Claire at all. So. Does that show us that he liked Zoe a bit more than it was all played on? Did Claire?
That was all simply just because at the time Zoe had something he needed,
right?
And that's it. And now Zoe's gone.
You know, now has something he needs?
No, I think you're absolutely. I think you hit it right on, and that's something that always was in the back of my mind. But I think you're right, because I think what he did with Zoe was making her prove to him how much he could trust her. Because if she was going to go through all of that effort and have sleep with him and then take those photos, you know, he knew that he could trust her to a certain extent. You know, that, and then once he thought he couldn't trust her anymore, that was it. Right? I don't know. I hadn't thought of that until you said that, Charlotte.
No, but it just occurs to me, seeing this Jackie and Remy relationship, Claire's obviously cheated on Adam, with Adam, and we saw that.
Yeah, that was nice.
But that was as a consequence of you. I mean, perhaps they both sort of got even with each other and realized they can't pull that kind of stuff again, and it's obviously a lot harder as the vice president of the U.S.
Mm. Yeah, that I'll take that opinion too, because I think it's either way, but I could see that happening too, would be the case. We're pretty much out of time, Jackie.
We are. Yeah. No, I think we did. We covered this one really well. Okay, so thank you guys so much. And I'm Jackie Hearn. You can find me at JackieHearn81 on Twitter.
Oh, you can just find me on Twitter at Vincent404. And if you want to catch any of my other geeky stuff, head on over to cosmicradio.tv.
I'm at charlotteahenry.com and at charlotteahenry on the Twitters.
How's your blog coming? You started a slug line blog.
Yeah, well, I'm turning it more into in tribute to Zoe. I sort of doing a sort of developing a daily newsletter. So we're doing that, and it's all at charlotteahenry.com. So come join the fun.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.